Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Pinkham.com Norwich City podcast as we look back on a 0-0 draw at Brighton, which we're not going to be too kind on, I would imagine, despite it being a clean sheet away from home. You know, you never sniff at an away point, particularly in the Premier League. But unfortunately, the performance didn't really deserve that point, and the relegation situation is still looking pretty bleak for Norwich City. But what I want us to try and do today is, rather than just talk about how bad they are, which I think we all know by this point, is try and drill down into a little bit of why they're looking quite so bad at the moment. It's Dave Freezer here alongside Connor Southwell and Paddy Davitt, fresh back from the South Coast. And Pad, yeah, I think I've sort of teed it up there that this really was not an impressive away draw with a clean sheet, was it?
No. I mean, I've just done, as I was telling you boys just before recording here, I've done my papers review for the Pinkham Plus app. That'll be up a bit later on Sunday. And there's a stat in one of the papers that Brighton recorded 31 shots and failed to score. The last time Norwich coughed up that amount of chances was apparently the Man City game of the last Premier League season, the Project Restart season, when the result that day, of course, was a 5-0 hammering. So if we want a shaft of positivity, at least they didn't ship five goals for giving up that amount of chances. But that probably is a reflection of Brighton's attacking firepower compared to Man City's galaxy of talent. Because if they'd had, Kevin De Bruyne, Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva, et al., Gabriel Jesus playing yesterday to finish off them chances, we probably would have been talking about a fiver as good as Tim Krul was when called upon. But, of course, yeah, a lot of the focus will be on Neil Maupai's penalty miss. But really, if you're looking at it through a Brighton lens, that shouldn't have really mattered because the weight of other chances they created should have converted into a win. But, you know, luckily for Norwich, they encountered a team who'd also lost six on the spin in the Premier League and have scored one goal in seven. And as a result, it's probably that why, as Dean Smith said, well, we've stopped the rot. But I think it's more by Brighton's profligacy than really anything Norwich did. Yes, they were without the ball, resolute when they had to be. We've talked prior to recording, and probably will do now, about Krul and Hanley. Dean Smith referenced those two. I thought that, yeah, they did show the resolve you need. But, you know, ultimately, it's a point earned because of Brighton's failure to convert a stack of chances, and that it shouldn't fool anybody. You know, it isn't really, as Dean Smith wanted to call it, a building block or halting a losing run. It's more of the same, really. You know, not good enough. Certainly at the top end of the pitch, and we'll get into that in due course, but really just boil it down to these last three crucial make or break must win games: Brentford, Leeds, and now Brighton. They've taken 1 point, really, and that, as I say, to reiterate what I've just said, that 1 point is down to Brighton's inability to convert their chances. So by no manner of means is it a good place to be if you're anything to do with Norwich this morning.
No, 31 attempts at goal, 63% possession, 11 corners. The fact that Brighton were booed off says so much, and I heard one of the home stewards as we were winding down for the day saying, that's the worst team we've played all season and we've not managed to beat them. And they were so deservedly annoyed that they hadn't put Norwich away, because that could have been a 4 or 5 nil defeat. I'm trying to remember which game it was. I think it was the Brentford home game when I was using the word calamitous. And the first half in particular, Connor, was so frustrating, wasn't it? The amount of unforced errors, it must have been sort of 15 or 20 unforced errors. They'd get the ball back and then just give it straight back to them. Or Lees Malou just sort of stumbled the ball out of play. And you knew this, just setting Brighton away on an attack and stuff. And we'll come back to that a little bit in terms of why a bit later on. But yeah, calamitous was the word for me. And I felt sorry for, you know, 1,800 fans still made the journey in this situation. That's pretty impressive.
It's really impressive, I think, because to be frank, they haven't been given much reason to make that journey this season from the performances that they've seen. And you mentioned kind of their work in possession. I think what's so staggering about that is how quickly that's changed from what we saw last season, where they, against obviously a different quality of opposition a lot of the time, but they did keep the ball well and they were a team of technicians. And there are still players within this side who were able to dominate games in the Championship last year, and there's a massive step up to the Premier League, obviously, and the calibre of opponents is radically different. But we're not talking about difficult passes, a lot of them. We're talking about 5, maybe 10 yard passes that they were either putting into touch or giving away or making some really poor decisions in possession. And when you do that and you don't get a feel for the ball, it doesn't help with confidence, even if that's low already. So, they're in a really difficult place because and you know both of you guys are right in everything that you said. Really, this is a game that should have ended with a Brighton win. I think the dominance is documented by the kind of stats that you showed there. But a lot of what Norwich City did in the first half was self-inflicted. I felt actually a lot of the Brighton breakaways came away from Norwich conceding possession. There was one in particular where Pierre Malou decides to switch the play and there's not a switch on. He's got a couple of easy passing options that he doesn't take, and he almost tries to catch Sam Byram out really with a switch of play that I think he gave away. So yeah, and that is disappointing because as I said, a lot of the opportunities and the passes that are given away, they're not difficult to make. And Billy Gilmore, for example, someone that we know has that technical quality, was a victim of that, and so were countless others as well. So, yeah, I just felt really that, and I'm sure we'll come back round to this, that there was just a real lack of a visible plan, and I'm sure there was one, and I don't particularly put that down to them being poorly coached. I just think it's where they are at the moment in terms of confidence, and like you say, I think there was such a focus on ensuring that they didn't lose the game that they didn't really try to win it, if that makes sense. And that's not necessarily a bad thing given the situation that they're in, but 1,800 travelling fans and you don't record a shot on target against a team who haven't won in the last six games. It's pretty telling for where Norwich City are, I think. And yeah, I don't want to go into the identity stuff too much because I'm sure we'll go into it. But yeah, I would agree with the word you used, calamitous, but a lot of that was in possession and really simplistic moments really where they just lacked quality, concentration and confidence as well, I suppose.
Yeah, you include the XG in your match report, don't you, on our website. Brighton 2.70, Norwich 0.61. So that tells the story as well. It should be noted as well, they were about 8 players for this game. So, you know, Norwich carry a fairly big squad, but we know in terms of strength and depth, that is an issue for them. So when you take out Max Aarons, Brandon Williams, Ozan Kabak, Andrew Omabamadeli, Lucas Rupp, Shemet Boaheta, Josh Sargent, and Adam Eder. That's the 8, isn't it? You know, that is a significant amount of absence from the Norwich squad. So I guess we've got to retain that. And you, when the teams dropped, that was kind of my feeling that Smith had gone with the safe hand, the safest pairs of hands that he had available, didn't he? And he was just trying to mould something that would be competitive. And it's still a reasonably strong starting 11 that he's got out there with a decent amount of experience. But you look at the bench and you've got the 4 academy lads in Tomkinson, Kamara, Rowe, of course, and Tony Springett for the first time. Jolis was on the bench. So there is a little bit of mitigation to all that. But as we teed up before the game, both teams, 6-game losing streaks. Brighton had only scored in one of those. So this, for them, was a massive opportunity. The point, they're on 34 points. They're obviously going to be safe. I'm sure they'll find another few points just to make sure they stay clear, but they're still 13. Norwich, as we're recording, Everton played this afternoon. They were at West Ham. Watford and Burnley both lost. Watford 2-0 at Liverpool, Burnley 2-0 at home to Manchester City. So that was helpful. So the table has, of course, improved. They've cut the gap to 7. Everton still have 3 games in hand on Norwich ahead of their game this afternoon. Burnley still have 2 in hand. So we'll come back to next weekend, but it's worth noting Everton and Burnley play in midweek. So that's going to have an impact on things as well. So as we've teed it up here, Pad, in terms of being calamitous of these, that Lees Malou moment is, and the Byram handball as well for the penalty, these sort of strange, calamitous, unforced errors. This is the Norwich City players. They're not showing their true ability, are they? We've seen even this season, all of those players who are out there yesterday, other than maybe Hanley and Krul, are better than what they performed at. And for me, it feels like they just are shot of confidence now. Their belief is on the floor. They don't have any confidence. And they're now just performing quite strangely.
I mean, and all of that was essentially where Dean Smith went in his post-match. He said, actually said, I watched these players playing for their countries and they look good players. They look very good players. You know, Rashica goes off, scores twice with Kosovo. Gilmore looks a completely different player in a Scotland shirt, and on and on. Norman starts for Norway and they've got one or two very, very good players and look to be back on the up again. So it can only be... And then he went on in that answer to say, and then they come back to a losing culture, a losing environment. And you see, so much of this game is between the ears, and mentally they look different players. I've seen report one or two people sort of claiming, you know, that maybe they're looking to hide now and they're not getting on the ball and try and be brave. And of course, then you contrast that with the attitude of a John Rowe when he goes on, who's just fearless and just loving being dropped into this environment and wants everything, wants to take everything, wants to muscle his way into it, wants more of it, and that hunger and desire. And conversely, you're not seeing anywhere near enough of that from players who, as I say, as Dean Smith says, you know, are good enough to represent their countries. You know, Norwich lost 14, 15 players, as they do every window that I can remember in recent seasons. You know, these players are deemed to be very good players for their respective countries. So ultimately, you know, you can drill down into it. And it does come down to confidence and a lack of belief and being fragile and being brittle. And as Tim Krul said in his post-match, they go behind and there just isn't that collectively or individually resolve to come back. And we saw that in the previous Premier League season. I don't think they grabbed a point from a losing situation in the 1920 Premier League season off the top of my head. So there's something maybe in the psyche of these Norwich players. And that might essentially be, I mean, we're saying they're good enough. Are they good enough? I'm not sure they are good enough to be better than bobbing along at the wrong end of the Premier League. I think ultimately, do these players believe they're good enough? It's all we can talk to the cows come home, as can supporters, but do these players, many of whom have been over this course and distance before and failed and are going to fail again, do they really, if you sat them down, turned the cameras and microphones off and just spoke to them and, you know, in their heart of hearts, do they believe they're good enough? And I think the jury would be out. And for me, they're not good enough. And as a result, that's where Norwich are. And it doesn't matter really, you know, if it's Dean Smith or if it's Daniel Farker, if the players aren't good enough, then, you know, I don't think any coach is going to really be able to do too much with this group of players. And of course, then that bleeds into, well, how do you rectify that? How do you set about improving the grade of player at Norwich City when they get to the Premier League? But of course, when I put that to Dean Smith on Friday about the model, is the model to blame? He said, well, the model has won two championships at a canter. So, you know, I don't think you just rest this at the door of, we need a different model. We need deeper owners, deeper pocketed owners, because I think there's plenty of evidence that isn't the case, or that isn't the magic bullet that would suddenly transform Norwich's fortunes. As Dean Smith also said, the more money you've got, the better chances you've got of not being embroiled in a scrap for survival. And you can carry pertinent, again, this weekend, you can carry the loss of two or three of your key players. Palpably, Norwich can't do that, and it's been proven. But, you know, I've written about it for my verdict. There's three phases in this Premier League season, if you want to break it down now, where over the course of eight or nine game sequences, Norwich have lost six or seven. Not all on the spin, but over a nine-game sequence, they've lost six or seven games, and they've done that on three separate occasions. Well, that tells you the players aren't good enough, and that when they face a bit of adversity, maybe those inner fears come to the surface. And as a result, you know, it's going to end where it ended two seasons ago, which is the championship again. So that's, I think, where I'm probably going with this now, is that I don't think the players are good enough.
Yeah, it feels like a malaise to me. Like the players who were involved in the squad 2 years ago, they've already got fragile confidence at this level, and that's kind of been destroyed again, hasn't it? And football's a funny game. It wouldn't have taken much to build confidence. Confidence is pretty much everything in football, isn't it? You know, you're in the championship, you get a few wins. Like, even if you go back, we had an interesting discussion in this in the NCFC live blog on Pink and Plus during the game, as we often do. And I was saying, look back on the 2018-19 season when, as we all know, it was brilliant in the end. They were deserving champions. They were playing amazing football. Farker Ball was brilliant. But at the start of that season, they were starting off pretty shakily. They weren't blowing teams away. You build that confidence through the start of the season, don't you? And then people start saying, oh, look how fit Norwich look. And they go right to the end of games. And it's because they're confident. It's because they believe in themselves, isn't it? It's because they keep going. And as we're seeing at the moment, when your confidence is not, and when you're struggling psychologically, that then has a physical impact, because Lees Malou knows he shouldn't be playing that pass. You knew this knows he shouldn't just be stumbling the ball out of play. There were, within 10 minutes, Smith was absolutely raging in his technical area, wasn't he? Because the most simple of passes were going astray. You know, Norman just knocking one far too long for you knew this down the left. There were Gilmore giving it away a few times. It was just everywhere. It was unavoidable that they were playing badly. And it was almost laughable that they were still in the game throughout, really. So that psychological thing is really interesting. But when you look back on the results as well, and you think back on the performances and the bounce they were looking for from Smith, they got the win against Southampton. They should have beaten Wolves. They definitely should have beaten Newcastle. If they get those three results that they should have done, really, particularly Newcastle, I mean, what a big mistake that was when they were down to 10 men from so early into the game. And Lees Malou, of course, had the chance to win that in injury time, didn't he, that night? If they win those games, this squad could have been transformed. All of a sudden, the pressure would have been off their shoulders a little bit. Some of those young players like your Sargents and your Jollis and whoever might have just started to show a little bit, and they might have built that little bit of confidence. And then there are fine margins in football, aren't there? They might have just nicked a few more points here and there that meant they're net more competitive at this point. And as you say, I think if you were able to just sit one-on-one with one of the players, off mic, off record, they would admit, yeah, we're really struggling. We're really disappointed. We're really low on confidence. And yeah, Connor, what do you make of that sort of psychological side of things? Before we come, we'll try and look at some of the very small positives on the back of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's natural, isn't it? And it's the same in any walk of life. If you're short of confidence, you try and play it safe, and you maybe are naturally a bit more defensive in the way that you operate, and that's in any job, I think, let alone football. But you're right, so much of it is about confidence, and you know, even to the very low level that I played football, I can remember when I was feeling confident in myself and when I wasn't, and how that impacted you and the decisions that you make on the pitch. Because actually, when confidence is flowing, you are willing to take a risk. You are willing to play that pass that maybe you wouldn't play ordinarily, and there is a big difference. So there is a psychological point to this, and you're right, there are also moments in this season that if they'd have transpired differently, that we might see a completely different group of Norwich City players. And likewise, if certain injuries hadn't have happened at certain points, Milo Rashica looked like he was really getting going before Christmas, then he got injured. Mateus Norman in kind of the same vein, I suppose. Adam Eder, another one that you can throw in there. So yeah, I mean, there's that element to it, and there's obviously the luck element. But I think there's also a responsibility element as well. There have also been points this season, and that Newcastle game for me is probably the most pertinent, where they needed someone to actually drag them through. And this might be a quality point as well, but they haven't really had that. They haven't had someone who can decide games or roll their sleeves up and offer them just that extra bit of quality. And that's across the team. That's collectively. So there's that element as well. I think those two things that we talk about, both the psychological elements and the technical and kind of quality elements, I suppose, work in tandem. And I think at the moment we're seeing a Norwich City team short on quality and short on confidence as well. And that, as a result, makes them very hard to coach and very hard to mould, because whenever you're trying to implement a style as a coach, put your ideas across in a certain way, you're hoping to have a confident group of players that you can do that, to kind of play out your ideas and to do it on the pitch. And that's what we saw so expertly, as you mentioned, growing under Daniel Farker in the two promotion seasons. So that isn't there at the moment. And that, from Dean Smith's perspective, makes it very, very difficult, I think. So trying to wrap that all up, it's very difficult to kind of pinpoint one person or one thing or one element that makes this so difficult, because I think actually it's probably a mix of all of the elements that we're speaking about, and the psychological and kind of the on-pitch elements. And that, for Dean Smith and the players and everyone else and the fans, is what makes this very difficult at the moment. Like you said, some of them will have muscle memories of what it was like 2 years ago, and they will understand these feelings and the trends and the patterns that are transpiring at the moment. So, yeah, it's a tough situation. But they've got to find a solution in the last eight games, I think, to make them a little bit more competitive, probably from an attacking standpoint. And that is ultimately the job of Dean Smith to try and solve.
Yeah, well, let's bring that round to Smith a bit, Pad, then, and his most recent press conferences and some of the things that he said. You know, in this situation, 18 points, 18 goals from 30 games, you would expect to be hearing the usual sort of things of, oh, they've downed tools, they're not playing for the manager, they're not trying. I'm not really hearing much of that. I feel like most fans feel those players are going out there and trying. If anything, they're almost trying too hard at times, and that you can see they're conflicted and they're just not playing to their full potential. But what has felt worrying even before this game, really, in terms of Smith's demeanour, is that it's pretty clear that he doesn't feel that the things that him and Shakespeare are saying to them are then being carried out once they get out onto the pitch. And again, during the game yesterday, we see their body language and how annoyed they're getting very swiftly in the game. They're not happy with the players.
No, and as you rightly said, you know, he was very quick to express that dissatisfaction. And what can him, Shakespeare and Bramley really do about Matthias Norman not being able to pass a 5-yard ball to a teammate and roll it out of play? What can they do at Colney to ensure that doesn't happen? Ultimately, for me now, yes, I think you can increasingly start to question what is he trying to do with this group in possession, in terms of, you know, how do they progress the ball up the pitch? I don't see any real identity or pattern emerging, and that is at Smith's door, clearly. But the flip side is, as I say, I think those players, you know, ultimately are not of the grade required, but also now so bereft of any confidence or belief that I don't really think there's too much he can do in this situation. Ultimately, he must be desperate, and we know he's planning to sit down with Stuart Webber this week. And he said to me on Friday the scenario planning had basically been in place since the turn of the year. Well, there's only one scenario now, and that is relegation and coming back again at the earliest immediate opportunity. So you would hope that it's full steam ahead now, because he must be desperate to get this season out of the way. Publicly, of course, he's still going to talk up there's enough points, there's great escape examples in the past that he's been involved in, that Shakespeare's been involved in, and why would he go down a different route for the foreseeable? But he will know privately that the game is up, and he must be absolutely counting the days until Tottenham in the final game of the season, and that's out of the way, and then they can turn the page and he can really start to put his stamp on this group and this football club as well. Because, you know, ultimately, if he doesn't and they're not quick out of the traps, then, you know, all that latent frustration, I think, will be there through the summer and into the start of next season. And the huge difference, of course, with two seasons ago was there will be supporters, we hope, unless things take a turn for the worse, but there will be supporters in those stadiums if it is the Championship from the start of next season. And they will be very quick, I'm sure, to express if it's a continuation of what we're seeing, which is this. I don't know. It's just a bit of a fog at the minute in terms of what Norwich are trying to do in possession. And ultimately, for me, it's the midfield. And they don't have good enough midfielders at this level, collectively or individually, to get them up the pitch, to connect the defence to the attacking players, which is why the back line looks so vulnerable and why Pukki and Rashica look so isolated. And until that is rectified, it's not going to matter so much, I don't think, dropping down a level, because they probably are good enough. Obviously, Norman will go, Gilmore will go back to Chelsea, but the remaining players would be probably above average in terms of Championship level. But this isn't supposedly about the Championship now. It's about equipping this club on and off the pitch to become sustainable in the Premier League. And with that in mind, purely fed through the playing side of it, they need to find players. And that's the big imponderable. How do they find players in their price brackets that are good enough to not just come back through for the championship again, but actually to give them a measure of parity in a key area of the pitch in the Premier League week in, week out. And really, they haven't had it. I mean, what was the summer dominated by? A replacement for Ollie Skip. Well, Matthias Norman hasn't been that, injury or not. Billy Gilmore certainly hasn't been that. Pierre-Lise Malou hasn't been that. And that sore has been running all through this season, and they need to address it. And that, for me, is absolutely critical this summer, that they can put something together in that area of the pitch that would equip them to come back to the Premier League and have a proper crack at it. Because if you can't establish a measure of parity, even if you're not an overtly possession-based team like a Brighton, even if you're set up to counter a little bit more, you still need to be able to be good in that area of the pitch with and without the ball. And this Norwich collective palpably are not, week in, week out. And as a result, they're on the back foot more weeks than not. So, I think Smith, increasingly the focus will be on him and his methods, and that's right. But I still think most supporters at this stage would think, well, it's the group he inherited. Let's see what you can do in the summer. Let's let him put his stamp on it. Let's see him with a brand new season to get his teeth into, and then that'll be the time to judge him. Because, you know, at the minute, maybe marginally in terms of the stats, he's getting more out of this resource than Farker was, but there's not much difference. And certainly that managerial change in November hasn't had the desired effect.
Yeah, it's a low bar, isn't it? Although I can give you a positive. They have taken one more point than they did in the final nine games of the last Premier League season, thanks to this game, at the very least.
We live Norwich City.
The builder.
The passion. The drama.
The last minute winners.
The debate.
That's why we've created Pink and Plus.
Pink and Plus.
The app that takes you beyond the headlines.
With exclusive columns, blogs, podcasts and videos, we've got you covered.
Subscribe today. Pink and Plus. Stay ahead of the game.
Download now on the App Store and on Google Play.
I thought we were going to get, I thought things were going to descend further at one point in the second half. I thought we were going to have a Kieran Dyer, Lee Bowyer moment on our hands when Norman loses his man in the sort of the left back position, and then Maupai scoops it wide. Ben Gibson went ballistic at him, didn't he? And Grant Hanley had to separate them twice because they were arguing, and both sort of standing their ground in the situation. So I suppose we need to kind of look for just a few positives. There aren't really. I mean, I don't want to bang on too much about Krull and Hanley having a good game, because as we've already said, they should have lost 4 or 5-0, and then we're not talking about Krull and Hanley having a good game, are we? But there was an exceptional save in the mix from Krull, as everyone will have seen in the highlights, when he denies the Veltman header from point blank range. They know each other from Holland and Ajax, and the Brighton defender gave him a good sort of pat on the back, didn't he, to say, "I can't believe you've pulled off that save," almost. But I think things like the championship rebuild, which is likely, and all that sort of stuff, and should the lone players be playing, that they're obviously going to keep playing Norman and probably Williams, maybe even Gilmore as well, and until they're mathematically done. But you would have, once it's mathematically done, by that point, there's no point playing Norman, is there? Play Sorensen, get him built for next season, get him some Premier League experience, because he's the much more likely to be the Ollie Skip replacement next season, or even Alex Tete replacement, really, because they lost them both last summer, didn't they? And that was a problem for years, that they weren't able to replace Tete properly. But there was a chance at the end, wasn't there, Connor? They could have, bizarrely, ended up winning this game. And if Rashica had just shown a little bit of calm, then he may well have pulled off a bit of a smash and grab. And as I was saying to you boys before we started recording, if you look at the highlights, John Rowe had made a really good run to the near post as well, that Pukki should have probably picked out, which was probably the easier option than the volley.
Yeah, it would have been absolute daylight robbery, wouldn't it? Because there's not. I mean, that's probably the furthest they ventured up the pitch all afternoon, to be completely honest. But yeah, I mean, that opportunity, you would expect someone of Milo Rashica's quality to control the volley a bit better than he did. It looked to me he kind of got caught in two minds between smashing it with his laces and maybe opting to control it with with the side of his foot, and in the end kind of did neither and scooped it over. But when ultimately we talk about quality and big moments within games, if you are going to do what Norwich did yesterday, which was to set up to contain and basically try and keep yourself in the game as long as possible, which is what it is at the moment for Dean Smith and Norwich, then when that opportunity does arrive, and you know, as yesterday proved, it may only come once in a game, it might come twice, you have to ensure that you take it at this level. And that's ultimately why they're in the position that they're in, because they don't take those opportunities when they arrive. And we could probably list 5, 6, 7 this season that have arrived and presented themselves that have been as good, if not better, than that opportunity Rashica had yesterday. And I mean, it is a difficult opportunity, because it's coming from the opposite flank. You have to get your body shape right. You have to position yourself right. You have to judge the flight of the ball. So there's a little bit of leeway there, and it wasn't absolutely clear cut. He should have scored, but I think he will be disappointed that he didn't get it on target, given the situation and given the size of opportunity that it was. But yeah, I mean, I would chime with what Pad said. Really, I think in terms of how Norwich City approach games at the moment, and probably widening the debate to Dean Smith more generally, at this stage, I personally would have wanted to have seen more patterns of play, even if they're doing what they're doing at the moment, which is staying in games. When they've got the ball, it would have been nice to go, okay, well, that's clearly what Dean Smith is trying to make them do. And at the moment, there's not really a structure to it. And now a part of that is because of what we spoke about earlier and the confidence and the quality, because if players can't pass the ball 5 yards, it's very difficult to then assert your coaching methods onto a group of players who can't then carry it out. So I can understand the frustration that Smith might have from that perspective, but I still think it's better to try and do something, to try and have a plan, but to do the plan badly than what they're doing at the moment, which it doesn't look like they do have an attacking plan, which I'm sure isn't the case. And I think that's probably where fans are frustrated a little bit, because for all the talk of kind of showing fight and, you know, being solid defensively and being hard to beat, that's fine. But then equally, you've got to go and cause problems at the other end, and they're too easy to play against at the moment. And that is the major frustration. The fact we're only really talking about Emilio Rashica's chance is, again, against a team that haven't won in 6, and the confidence was low. We were in the Amex yesterday. The fans were ready to turn. They booed at the final whistle. They booed at halftime. They've entered their frustrations quite regularly throughout. So, yeah, as Pad said, you just want to see them have a little bit. And actually, that move that led to the Rashica chance was probably the best example of a counter-attack that they showed all afternoon. It was Billy Gilmore intercepting a counter-attack from Brighton. He then surges forward, plays Timu Pukki, does really well to get around Dunk, I think, and work himself in a position to hold the ball up, to allow bodies to support the attack. So it was probably the one attacking moment that was really bright. The rest of it was really abject, I felt, from an attacking perspective. And it's I probably would have expected a little bit more from Dean Smith at this stage. But equally, it's difficult, I think, to fully judge it in the whole, because as we've spoken about in the last half an hour, Norwich don't have the quality to really assert themselves on a Premier League football match. I also think that's clear. So to a degree, I kind of understand why he's firefighting and why he's being pragmatic and why Norwich is setting up to contain teams and keep themselves in matches. Because you look at the last two, and they should have lost at Leeds by a lot more and didn't. They're in that game until the last minute. They're in the game yesterday for out and got a clean sheet and a point. So from his perspective, you could maybe argue that with this group of players, which all season has proven that it's not standard in the Premier League, it is staying in games and it is being competitive. But by the same token, I feel the only way that you breed confidence is by going and having a go at teams and scoring goals and trying to assert yourself on games, because at the moment it feels a little bit like they're just defending in hope that they don't concede the first goal, and if they do, then it feels like they're going to lose the game at the moment. So that for me is the major thing that I'd like to see change in the last 8 games, because it's clear now, as we said, the destination that they're going. For me, it needs to look at next season, and Smith needs to look at it and says, actually, okay, what are the principles that I need to embed in this group of players for next season? Am I going to set the team up so they go and press? Am I going to set them so they hit teams on the counter-attack? They need to do something. At the moment, I'm not seeing that. And I think increasingly that's where supporters will become frustrated with Dean Smith, who, by and large, I don't think will take anywhere near the amount of the blame as maybe some other people in Norwich City's fate this season. But by the same token, I think there does need to be a degree of more output, particularly next weekend against Burnley, I would say.
Indeed. Right. Let's reset a little bit and just look at the situation through neutral eyes, because they did get a clean sheet. They did get a point. So the table, as things stand ahead of Everton's game at West Ham, let's hope that they don't go and win there. That's if they do. If, you know, if Everton win their two games before Norwich play Burnley next weekend, then they're relegated. That will be basically it. That, it won't be mathematically done, but Everton will be, what, 13 points clear of Norwich and still with a game in hand. It wouldn't be possible for Norwich to get out at that point, almost certainly. Everton on 25 points with three games in hand on Norwich. Watford, 22 points, having played the same amount of games. Burnley on 21. Two games in hand on Norwich, and then of course Norwich at the bottom on 18 with 30. So we've got that Everton game. Then Wednesday night, it's Burnley against Everton. I guess we want a 0-0 draw there. I suppose a Burnley win would be better than Everton, but yeah, a draw hopefully. And then, Pad, there is no avoiding it that if that's how things open up, that next Sunday is an opportunity to keep things alive, and all of a sudden you'd have 4 points from two games, and there would be that glimmer of hope, and people could turn up at Carrow Road next Sunday with at least something to play for. But it's still, it almost feels a bit ridiculous to try and drag a little bit of hope out of it, doesn't it?
Yes, but and of course, today we're recording this ahead of West Ham Everton. That's Frank Lampard going back to his first club. You know, a lot of connections there. So I hope that story isn't already written in terms of a Toffees win. I understand where you're going with that. And, you know, it isn't door closed. Hand back your Premier League badge and on you go, boys. See you hopefully in 12 months' time. But it feels that is the case. Because if you can't muster more than a point from Brentford, Leeds and now Brighton, where are they coming? Where are the far bigger quantities coming from between now and the end of the season? And that's irrespective of and Everton stumbling and continuing to stumble, Watford, Burnley, because they're going to need that now. That's the level of complex equation. It isn't simply about what Norwich do now. Norwich could pick up and it still might not be enough, and it probably wouldn't be enough because they've left themselves too much to do. So just to follow on from what Connor's just said there, I think for me now it's about starting with Burnley, particularly with it being at Carrow Road, show those fans who are going to be there at Carrow Road a week today, show them something for the future. Because this season, the race is run, essentially. They're fulfilling, essentially, the rest of their fixtures, but their chances of staying in the Premier League have long gone, really. So what we need to see, as we as in Norwich fan base, is optimism and something to cling on to going into the summer. And part of that will be, obviously, winning a few games, performing in a style that, right, I can now start to see what Dean is trying to do with a Norwich City team with and without the ball. I think if that could emerge between now and the end of the season, that's a positive. And also, John Rowe is the spearhead, but an injection of younger talent who, realistically, some of those could play a role, maybe not a leading role, but certainly could be fed through into the system next season. You know, those are the elements now, I think, that Norwich's fans will want to see. By no manner of means will they want to see Burnley turn up here next week and a horrible, ugly affair, and they go away with the points and we learn nothing more about what a Dean Smith Norwich City looks like in the longer-term future, because this is now about the longer-term future. You know, it hasn't sadly worked. He will sadly have the first relegation on his coaching CV, and that will probably sting, but I still think, and maybe this is records for in the months after the end of the season, but I don't think under this manager there needs to be any panic. I think he with the right support around him, and that's clearly mainly focused on the squad refresh over the summer, he is more than good enough to bring this team back out of the Championship. But I think it might be a little bit of a rockier road than maybe the last time. And whether they do it at the first attempt, time will tell. But I don't share maybe some of the worst doom mongers predictions that this could be Norwich now heading into the Championship abyss for a number of years. I think the principles that the club are built on now are far too solid to withstand another Premier League relegation. But that's for the summer and maybe beyond. But for me, it's irrelevant what Everton do or don't do or Burnley do or don't do. I think Norwich will be in the Championship. So if they're going to be in the Championship between now and Tottenham, the final Premier League game, let's see enough circumstantial evidence to suggest, yeah, okay, they're in safe hands. And now we can go into a summer with, yes, the sort of frustration and pain from another relegation. Nobody, if you're associated with Norwich, wants to have that on your CV again. But at least with a feeling that, well, we've seen enough there over those last eight games or so that, yeah, okay, this guy knows what he wants, knows where he wants to take Norwich. And we can look forward to winning a few games of football in the Championship and those supporters actually enjoying turning up and watching a Norwich team play.
It is a dark place at the moment. It is difficult to not let your sort of anger and frustration and almost embarrassment get the better of you. But perspective is so important. And Norwich are still overall in a strong position. Financially, they're still going to be, if not the strongest, certainly one of the strongest in the Championship next season. And there's no reason why they shouldn't bounce back. And when we finally get to that point, you know, QPR, I don't know if they've actually confirmed it yet, but it sounds like Mark Warburton's leaving. Would they want Dean Smith if they could appoint him right now? Of course they would. Every Championship club would have Dean Smith right now, I'm pretty sure. The only other person maybe in that mix, Daniel Farke. Don't think Norwich would be going back down that line because that would be a bit of a strange situation, wasn't it? As much as he will always remain a very popular person here, I do think there's some people being a little bit revisionist when they start saying things were better under Farke, because unfortunately the start of this season was a pretty big mess, and the 7-0 defeat at Chelsea and all that sort of stuff. So you sort of mentioned it there, Pat, in terms of the future and the young players. I did want to mention that, Connor. We've had a series on Pink and Plus this week, haven't we, of interviews with Jonathan Tompkinson, Liam Gibbs and Abu Kamara, which you went down to Colney to do earlier this week. The under-23s played Friday night. I went along to that one, sent my little brother to that game. 1-1 draw with Sunderland, dominated the game. An Archie Mayer mistake sort of gave them their goal. Really, they were playing out from the back and he shanked his kick a little bit. It was then a decent finish from the Sunderland lad. But Norwich had loads of chances and just couldn't force the winner, basically. It was quite a good atmosphere, actually. There's about 1,000 fans in the South Stand. They really got behind the players. It felt like a winner was coming, but they didn't quite find it. Flynn Clark was the one who I'd highlight as he was the standout. I thought it was almost maybe a little bit of Madison about him. I thought he there was a couple of really nice back heels, a good bit of skill. He was one to watch. But as I throw it over to you, Connor, the point really with the under-23s as they chase that playoff place is that they're kind of already going for a progression, aren't they? As we've seen this weekend, Tompkinson on the bench, Rose already gone to the first team, Springett and Kamara are massive players for them. Dixon Peters is out on loan. They've kind of had the key parts of their team already moving on and look like they've probably set up their careers already.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is one massive bright spot, I think, for Norwich City at the moment. This group at the moment in the 23s and there's a few in the 18s as well. They've got a lot of talent coming through at once, really. So it probably, in that regard, you look at this squad at the moment, if they were to trim it and were to fill some of those spots with some players in the 23s at the moment to give them some first team exposure, that is a positive thing as far as I'm aware, because ultimately, and Paddy said earlier, kind of about looking to the future and providing optimism, young players do that, I think, irrespective of what the team is doing as a whole. If you've got a young player, look at the impact Jonathan Rowe has made over the last few weeks. He's been a real positive in a really dark period, and that's all supporters want, really, is to see young players coming through, see them progressing their careers with Norwich City. And actually the theme throughout those chats, actually, particularly with Liam Gibbs, who Norwich obviously poached from Ipswich last summer, a lot of the attraction that is bringing these young players to Norwich City ahead of other clubs, and there was speculation around Gibbs in particular that there were other clubs in for him when he decided to join Norwich City, was that pathway. And the fact there is a route through to the first team, and the opportunities that do arise as a young player at Norwich City, because there is an opportunity to go and play first team football, maybe more so than there are at other clubs. And Gibbs was directly comparing it to Ipswich, where those opportunities aren't as prevalent. And we've seen Kieran Dyer, for example, you mentioned earlier, and that's probably the most he's been mentioned in this pod ever. But he resigned, didn't he, a few weeks ago because he didn't feel the pathway and the opportunities were there for young players. So that is a real bright point for Norwich City as a football club, the opportunities that they afford them academy players. And that, as a young player, I would imagine is so encouraging. The fact that if you perform and if your performances are both individually and collectively very solid, there is then the opportunity for you to step up into a team that hopefully in the Championship will play better football and give you the confidence to express yourself, as we've seen with players in the past. So for me, that's anyone in need of looking for a positive or searching for a ray of light in what's been a very dark season. That is it for me. The fact that Norwich City now have an incredibly talented academy, a really talented group of under-23s who've done marvellously well this season. And every time I've watched them, are really exciting to watch, partly because they are a bit gung-ho, but there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, I would say. I think naturally, and it's an easy win as well for Dean Smith to throw these lads in at this point, because spoken about it in relation to John Rowe. Often you see it in relegation campaigns where a young player is given an opportunity or comes through and etc. So yeah, hopefully we see more of them in the weeks ahead, and then obviously Smith has an opportunity to properly assess them in pre-season.
Yeah, it was Liam Gibbs who hit the post just ahead of Clark scoring, and I think it was 82nd minute on Friday night. So they've got another Carrow Road game end of the month, if I'm remembering that correctly. It's West Brom, I think that's a Friday night as well. So the Premier League 2, Division 2 table is very tight. So I think they will need another win to make sure of the playoffs. They've got an away game against Wolves as well, but other teams have got games in hand. So that'll be interesting. And maybe that's something for fans to get behind a little bit at the end of the season if the first team, it does end up being a bit bleak. But there we go. Right. Well, boys, we've got a little bit of housekeeping to complete before we sign off, haven't we? I can't remember if I've actually mentioned this in the pod before, to be honest, but it was a bit of a weird weekend. My final match before I move on to a new role. I'm becoming deputy news editor of the EDP. I'm going to be leaving you boys to, I'm afraid, sorry, I'm leaving you to sort of the final matches of the season. But I mean, how many hundreds of podcasts have we recorded? Connor, you've been with us, what, 2.5 years now? And Pat, obviously, you've been here longer than me. I'll just double check. This is episode 484 of the Pinken podcast. So we're closing in on the big 500. And, you know, I started the Pinken pod as sort of on a trial basis when I was at uni, didn't I, back in 2008, as we've mentioned in the past, me and Pete Raven on just sort of trying it out. And it was a bit more sort of fan based, a bit like the sort of stuff Talk Norwich City and Along Come Norwich and stuff have done over the years, and eventually you boys picked it up and took it on properly. But I suppose I should pass on the pass it on to you now, Connor, as the host via the World Wide Web, as Michael passed it on to me, what, 2.5 years ago. Pass it on to yourself now. So I'm hoping that your internet connection isn't giving up at just the wrong point.
Look, it might have done, Dave. Yeah, I'm actually frozen in fear at the prospect of. that's your best laid plans gone kibosh. There he is. He's back.
And now he's on mute.
not a good start, this, Connor.
Yeah, this isn't good. Can you hear me now? Is that better?
I was saying it, I could see that you'd frozen. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope my internet's vastly improved to what it's been today, which has been struggling. But
your reign has started in inauspicious circumstances, Connor.
Yeah, it's the best way to start. If you set low expectations, then the audience come to expect that. So, no, but I mean, in all seriousness, Dave, I mean, it's been wonderful from my perspective to obviously work with you in the last two and a half years. You've certainly taught me a lot and helped me in the role. So, yeah, it's going to be to your role on this podcast, and hopefully with a better connection than I have done today. I'm sure Pad will agree that it's been a joy traveling to random places in the country with you and watching Norwich City. So Yeah, we will miss you, but I'm sure we'll get you back on the pod at different points in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, well, there's the torch officially passed, but I'm not sure Pad would use the word joy.
Well, not a minute, no, but that's not down to you, mate, sadly. But no, I've said to you privately, but yeah, I'd echo top man, top operator, big loss. Best of luck with a new venture, mate. And yeah, obviously you won't be a stranger. I think without breaking any confidences, you might be back once or twice before the end of the season anyway, just to keep the seat warm. But big shoes to fill for Connor. So yeah, we'll see how we get on.
Thanks very much, fellas. And thank you all very much for everyone that's listening for reading everything and stuff over the years. I've absolutely loved it. But it's been an honour to cover the team that I've always followed, and I've really enjoyed it throughout. But it's an opportunity's just come up at the right time for me, and so I'll be listening every week. Now can become one of the audience, and I'll be reading all your stuff, and of course we'll bring in someone new as well to fill this seat, and be interested to see what they can bring to the party as well. So that'll do for me. I will sign off, and I think I should probably hand over to Connor to close out the show for this week. And I should say as well, in association with Future Radio 107.8 FM for the last time, because I forgot to mention them at the start. And thanks very much for their involvement in recent years as well in putting us out on their channels. But Connor, over to you, and best of luck as host.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, fingers crossed this holds up. But yeah, thank you all very much for listening as ever. And we'll see you next week. Hopefully my reign as podcast host starts with a win against Burnley. And we can but hope. But yeah, we shall see. Of course, the Pink and Plus app as well, the place to go if you're yet to download that and you want a bit more exclusive content into what we offer. I think you can get a month free at the moment, $1.99 thereafter. So yeah, thank you very much for listening, Dave. Thank you very much for everything that you've done. And yeah, we'll see you again very, very soon.